Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Hello. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, thanks for asking. I'm doing great. Anyway,
I nearly didn't.
No, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Where are we walking today, Peter?
Maybe we're walking to through like a hospital waiting room because the staff there might be a bit more caring than I am towards you.
Right. You reckon they'll be socially polite?
Yeah, probably. You know,
I don't think they will.
Don't you? Like, no, they're under a lot of stress at the moment, I suppose.
Absolutely. I think they have every right to be quite rude to me because I've got nothing wrong with me. I'm healthy as a what's a healthy thing that I
as can a as a as an apple a day.
I'm as healthy as an apple a day, and if they see me in there, they'd be like, "What are you doing in here? Get out!
Why are you
wasting our time, idiot, stupid apple boy?" That's what they'll say.
That's the sign of a good bedside manner, is to be like, "What the hell are you doing in here? Get out,
apple boy! Get
apple
out,
apple boy!
Stupid idiot!" Just they get one look at my phone and they say, "Stupid apple boy!
Stupid apple boy! You little pip carrier! You
stupid seed idiot!
Yeah,
look at you with your stalk and
with your crunchy skin
and your leaves. You got a couple of leaves on there like a cartoon apple, have you, apple boy?
Just one leaf, apple boy.
By this point, I'm crying, obviously, and then there is something wrong with me. And but they still don't like me being there because I'm spreading, you know, tear fluid, apple juice all over
apple
the floor.
Juice, yeah.
So you
go home without any medical assistance, and then you die because, as well as having a little cartoon leaf on there, there was actually a little cartoon worm inside the apple all the time, and they didn't take it out.
They didn't, and the worm ate the whole boy.
Yeah,
the end. That's the Grimm's fairy tale.
It is. Yeah, the moral of the story is to move on to the introduction.
Yeah, just get on with it, I suppose, to talk about that video game podcast you're here to do.
Yeah.
We did it. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to this very video game related podcast. Peter, each week this show is sponsored by a brand new sponsor, and it's totally real.
It is, that's true. We take it in turns to liaise with such sponsors each week. I believe this week you've been in touch with some sort of mega corporation or some such. Who's our sponsor this week?
This week, our sponsor is... Oh, wow. Is your local bitey pest problem getting you down? You know,
always.
Like little bitey pests?
Yeah.
Well, then maybe you need to hire the pest control company run by a half-cat... half raccoon being.
Right.
Introducing Raccoon Kitty. They'll clean it good.
Oh, I see. They get rid of any bitey things on the streets or
it's very
in your
clever.
House.
It's so clever.
It is. I didn't expect the bitey things to be actual undead zombies. I thought
you
were
talking. We call them bitey pests.
Yeah, I thought they were like bed bugs or something, but
no.
Sure.
Operation Raccoon Kitty. They'll clean it good.
Is it like a genetically the perfect possible animal for getting rid of pests? It's been genetically engineered or selectively bred.
Absolutely. Right out of the nightmares of Animal Crossing comes Raccoon Kitty.
Wow. Well,
perfect cleaning beast.
Sounds perfect. I'm really glad that that's real and a service that I can call upon whenever I need to.
Totally real. Completely real. It's a real sponsor.
Yep.
Except it's not.
Oh. Goodness me.
Made you wait for that one, didn't I?
You thought it was.
Everyone thought it was real. You thought it was real. God, you should have seen it. Just see the look on your face. No, of course, that was a lie. You idiots. We got you. Of course, the actual sponsors of this podcast, as is the case each and every week, are the wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/Team Triple Jump, where you can support us for as little as $1 per month, and you'll get access to the podcast post, where you can ask questions every week for this podcast. Questions like...
like that one asked by David Lever, which says... Hi lads, loving the content. What are your favourite pieces of gaming tat that you own? I think mine are a coaster-sized metal coin from the Assassin's Creed 3 Collector's Edition and a Binding of Isaac pin badge. Keep up the good worm, it says. David.
Now, given the proximity of M to K, I have a feeling that this wasn't intentional.
You have a feeling that he didn't predict the future and the fact that we would have already have talked about a worm in today's podcast.
I don't think... Oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, what do we do now? I don't know how to process this information.
I think we just move on and pretend that David isn't some sort of oracle and just ignore it and put it to the back of your mind.
Okay, keep up the good worm.
Oh, spooky.
There it is.
I don't have a great deal of gaming tat. I've got a few bits and bobs here and there. I certainly don't have the majestic shelving displays present at Potter Towers.
Oh, my God.
There's all kinds of wonderful things. But I do have one or two items. I mainly just... it's for things that I'm really into. You know, so particularly Spyro. I've got that incense burner they released for the Reignited Trilogy. I didn't buy it to be an incense burner. I bought it to be a little Spyro statuette. But I've also got it's unofficial, but a little bit before they actually announced they were doing a Spyro sequel, there was no real Spyro merch available because it was, you know, almost a dead franchise at the time. So I bought an unofficial 3D printed crystal dragon. Nice. It's not made of crystal, it's made of just 3D printed stuff, but it's in the shape of the crystal dragon statuettes from Spyro 1 that you have to crack open, and it's in green. It looks great. I think you can now buy a very fancy one from like First for Figures or something that probably costs like 60 quid, but I'm happy with my little tiny one, little desk one.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of my favorite things, even though it's unofficial. But yeah, if it has to be an official thing for David's question, probably my Spyro statue, which is actually the background. It's at the office at the moment, isn't it? It's in our background on the shelves.
The crystal one.
The incense burner.
Yes. That's definitely there. People may have caught a glimpse of your crystal dragon because it was on your desk for the longest time.
It was, yeah. Certainly at What Culture it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever had it at Triple Jump, but yeah, it was definitely on my desk at What Culture.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, but that's probably it. And also, by the way, they're bringing it's not quite the same as Tap, but they're bringing out the Spyro Reignited Trilogy art book in July. Don't know why they're bringing it out like 2.5 years after the game or however long it's been.
Weird.
But, been waiting a long time for that. It's going to be a big hardback book with like 200 pages and a bunch of concept art that's not been seen by the public before.
Oh my God.
So I've really been looking forward to that. It's been on my Amazon wishlist for the longest time. But so that will be something that I think will be very proud to own.
Your coffee table is going to be so occupied.
It is. It absolutely is. But yeah, at the moment, probably my Spyro incense burner / statue, because that's what it is to me. It's just a statue.
Amazing. I'm gonna hard boil an egg, and for Christmas I'll hard boil it now just so I can get it out of the way and it'll be in tip top condition by Christmas. I'll paint it purple and put little speckles on it, and then I'm gonna give it to you, and then you will have a dragon egg too. A totally scentless dragon egg.
Official.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, thank you. That's very kind. I'm slowly getting all of the all of the bits and bobs.
Yeah, absolutely. We've still got some leftover stuff from 2018 where we cut it out of cardboard for that Spyro challenge.
Yes. So I
can give you one of those. That'll be fine.
Oh, fantastic. The talisman. Yeah. How can you possibly choose your favourite piece of tat from everything you own?
Oh, I do own a lot of tat, Peter.
Yeah.
I certainly do. I was looking at my shelves for inspiration, and I asked my friend, what constitutes tat? What is a tat?
Hmm.
And the definition I was given was anything you can't use.
Okay.
And that's most things that I own, as I've
discovered. Got a prediction, by the way, about what I think yours might be.
Okay.
Shall I sort of say now?
Yeah,
or...
yeah, give it to me.
I think it'll either be one of your Soulsborne very fancy, lovely statues.
Okay.
Or, for some reason, I don't know why, maybe it's because it's one of my favourite things that you've got. You've got Nathan Drake's ring, haven't you? It's like a necklacey ring thing. I think that's pretty cool.
I have. Those are top-tier tats. Top-tier tats. However, it's not those.
I'm wrong.
I've gone with the Wolfenstein 2 Terrorbilly action figure.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that one?
I do.
So this was the limited special edition for Wolfenstein, the new... No, which one? They've got confusing subtitles. The New Colossus, I think, is the name of the second
one. Yes, it was. It wasn't the Twins one.
No, it wasn't the New Order, which is the first one, which is now the old one, the old order. I don't really know what's going on. Anyway, the New Colossus, I think, was the sequel.
I think it was that, yeah.
And one of the special editions was a big action figure box with a real BJ Blazkowicz inside it, a doll, and it's fully poseable, and it has different outfits and different accessories and weapons, and the whole box is made up to look like an action figure from the universe of Wolfenstein. So, of course, he's painted as a terrorist in the eyes of the Nazi menace, and so he's called Terror Billy. And he's one of a roster of antagonists in a children's cartoon in-universe. And so this is the action figure of Terror Billy. And it shows on the back the different action figures and characters that you can get, which obviously don't exist. But I just love the commitment to the bit and the authenticity of it. And so I've just got this ridiculous BJ Blazkowicz action figure in its box with his various outfits and accessories.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that they took it to that next level. They could have just released a BJ action figure for Wolfenstein fans, but they released one for in-universe fans of a show in which he's depicted as a villain, which is just that little bit extra bit of in-universe stuff. I like that.
It's fun. It's fun. And a really bloody hard game, too. By the way, if I'm pronouncing certain things slightly weirdly today, I've got an ulcer on the side of my tongue, which is super good for, you know, having teeth.
Yeah.
You ever had teeth before?
I have.
They're a real pain they are sometimes.
I've had an ulcer on my lip, on the inside of my, just like in front of my bottom front teeth. Just in the perfect place for my teeth to rub against.
It's really good. You know what it is?
What?
Stress. And lack of sleep,
yeah.
It's probably a combination of those. It'll be fine. We'll be all
You're
right.
You're so stressed all the time. No, it's okay.
Yeah, maybe we should go to the doctors.
Yeah, God, yeah.
Help.
Excuse me, can I have some Bongella, please?
Can you sell Bongella, right?
Walk into A&E and say, do you sell Bongella?
Please don't do that.
No,
Don't do that. That is the definition of you shouldn't even go to your GP for that.
No, you shouldn't. You should go to Boots. Or Boots. Tesco. Yeah.
One of them. Just go get Bongella from there. Oh, Bongella's hard to say with an ulcer. That's cruel, isn't it?
That's the Bongella for you. What?
God. Anyway, so yeah, my Terror Billy action figure is probably one of my favouritest pieces of tat that I own.
Mm-hmm.
An action figure that will never be played with.
What's one of the rarest tats? Not even the most valuable, but just what's...
God. I've got a couple of signed things. I've got a signed copy of MGS 1 signed by David Hayter. Mass Effect 3/2 signed by Mark Meer, the voice of Commander Shepard, Man Shepard.
Yeah.
The Last of Us, signed by Troy Baker. I got one of those 20th anniversary PlayStation 4 controllers, the one that's made up to look like a PS1 controller that's all grey and stuff.
Yeah.
I kept that in the box because I thought, huh, you'll never get those again, and you can't, so there we go. Christ, what else? I don't know. Rarity. Everyone seems to have a different one of those PS1 demo discs. There were like three different first demo discs or whatever.
Demo ones, yeah.
I've got one of those demo ones.
They kept redoing demo one to be, because it came bundled with the console, so they had to just have whatever the new, exciting, cutting-edge games were, you know, which was constantly changing.
So I'm not sure which one I've got.
I've got a poster, an official poster of The Unholy War that I bought.
Oh, nice.
I don't think many of those exist because
no one even
knows or cares about that game. I've been meaning to get it framed. At the moment, it's just pressed between two bits of cardboard that it arrived in when I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's rare. Not valuable, I wouldn't have thought, but pretty rare.
Oh, you've also got your Spyro... Oh, this is going to be hard to say. Spyro Strategy Guide.
I do, yeah. I've got the Prima Guide for Spyro 1. Yeah, that's true, actually. That's up there. I'd forgot all about that. Maybe because I don't consider that TAC, because it's technically got a use.
In terms of rarity, though, that's got to be something.
Yeah, it's all right, that. Yeah, I mean, again, like, that was the other thing I actually wrote in my notes for my answer, is that, I don't have that much tat, but instead I kind of collect old games. But that's a different question, really. But yeah, it's all good. I want to get some more old guides as well. Actually, I think they're pretty fun just to flick through and see an in-depth deep dive on a game.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've got a really really good condition Pokemon Yellow strategy guide.
Mm-hmm.
I got from AmeriCorps, and quite happy with that. But yeah, they are nice. The old strategy guides, they are fun to look at.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, moving on from tat and not tat, it's time for a section where we talk about the video games that we have been playing, and it's called... It's what we play in time. Peter, what are you playing?
I've not been playing that much this week, outside of my streamy games.
Mm-hmm.
Just been doing some long evenings and stuff, chipping away at edits and voiceovers and things.
Yeah.
But I have, as always, played two games, or three games, in fact, if I include Minecraft. Three games this week on stream. So we play Minecraft every Thursday. We're playing it today at time of recording. We're playing it this afternoon. How exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But also I tell a big old fat lie there.
Oh my god, you're fired.
Because, as well as playing some more Spyro 1 on Monday, which is ongoing, I've not finished the game yet, but probably take one more stream. That's very fun. On Wednesday, I played Halo 2 and finished the game, and it was only like halfway through the stream. So what I did was, I pulled up a couple of PS1 ISOs that I had just downloaded onto my computer from like previous bits of content and stuff. So I played PS1's Running Wild. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No.
It's like a jogging running game where you just race with anthropomorphic animals. There's like a zebra man and a panda lady and a bull dude and an elephant, and it's all sort of cartoony and wacky, and you have to like mash the X button to sprint. But like, despite it being really weird and obscure and probably not very successful, it's actually super fun to play and controls really well, and I would genuinely recommend it. I had a really good time playing it. But outside of that, I played that for like 25 minutes and then still had a few minutes left of the stream, so I quickly booted up Grid Runner, or Grid Run if you want to get European about this.
Whoa.
And that's a kind of top down, it's sort of Bomberman perspective, top down grid based game where you run around collecting flags and stuff, and you have to like tag your opponent if you want to be able to collect flags. It's like tag, but if you're it, you can't collect anything, so you have to go and tag your friend or your enemy.
Right.
But there's a cheat code for that game which just unlocks this really strange driving mini game that was like not part of the game at all. So there's this whole like other mini game hidden within it where you're driving a car around, which I don't know if it was maybe an unlockable thing if you complete the game, but I've never played it before, and I only became aware of it about a year ago, despite this being one of the first games I ever owned on PS1. So like 20 odd years on, I realized, oh, there's this weird unlockable driving bit that you can do. So you just like poot around in a little sort of VW Beetle, which is
so weird.
Super strange, yeah. Maybe it was the thing you unlock for completing the game, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, super odd. So yeah, I've played a few things this week without even realizing, but they were all on stream. So
nice.
Yeah, had a good time. What about you, Ben? What you been playing?
Well, I've played a little bit of Resident Evil Revelations, which was a port of a 3DS game to the PlayStation 3, which was then ported to PlayStation 4. And, oh boy, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
It's sort of right in the middle of that, hey, Resident Evil isn't scary anymore, period. Where
right.
It's a fine game, it's fine, you know, that you have to get the keys to open the doors and stuff like that and shoot the enemies, but it's not scary. It's none of it scary. It's just lots of big blobby boys running around and you shoot the blobby boys and there's always enough ammo and it's just fine, you know. It's really, really quite unremarkable. But I understand that Resi Revelations 2 is much better, so maybe I'll get round to that eventually. Probably not, though.
Are you playing it for trophy reasons or just because you're... Because you've played a lot of the Resi games, so is it just a kind of desire to get the full house now and have played them all?
I think so, yeah. I think I wanted to, you know, I want to have at least experienced most of the ones that I'm comfortable playing, you know?
Yeah.
I've finished 1, 2 in remake form, 3 in remake form. I haven't played 4.
Oh.
Played and finished 5 and 6. 6 obviously being the best Resident Evil game. Watched a significant amount, but don't really have the guts to play 7. And
spooky
I almost
game.
Certainly won't play 8 either.
Yeah.
Those earlier ones, you know, the dumb action ones, they're fine. I can do those.
8 looks pretty harrowing, I must say, from the little we've seen of it. It looks like Outlast or something.
It does. I thought it was maybe Silent Hills before the much rumored Silent Hills at that point before I saw Chris, obviously. It's like, what is this? It doesn't look like Resi, does it? I can't really tell.
I didn't think it was Resi. And I'd even heard, before they showed that trailer, there were rumours of, like, the next Resi game is going to be called Resident Evil Village.
Mm-hmm.
And then this spooky village trailer comes on, and I still didn't realise it was Resi. Partly because I was hoping that a game called Resident Evil Village might be something to do with Resi 4, either just a remake with a new title, or maybe even a sort of return to that area. But it appears to be a different part of the world, I think.
A whole new upsetting experience.
Yes.
What a treat. The main thing I played this week, though, is the new Borderlands 3 DLC, Bounty of Blood, which is another sizable update that comes with the season pass. It's sort of 5-ish hours worth of content. It's Wild West themed.
Right.
So you go to a sort of Wild West town, but they're using, you know, crazy technology, a little bit of Wow Wow West sort of
wiki
stuff.
Wiki Wow, yeah.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So they've got technology, but it's weirdly steampunky kind of deal, even though you're there with your crazy laser weapons and stuff. This is probably my least favorite out of the two other DLCs that have come out. But that's mainly because this is the... And I fully appreciate that this was likely... The majority of it was developed during everyone working from home.
Right.
But it's the buggiest one I've played so far. The game just seems to be way less stable than it ever was. It crashed the game twice, wherein I could still navigate to the PS4 menu and stuff. I just had to quit the game because it completely locked up. It soft locked, but it didn't lock up my console. And then other times there were dozens and dozens of situations where I was opening up my map and nothing was even displaying. I was interacting with characters and they weren't talking, but they were standing there as if they should be. And then, you know, whenever their dialogue had finished triggering, which it wasn't, then it would say quest complete. And it was like, oh, for God's sake, like how is this happening? I don't understand. I had a few times where there are various, you know, collectibles and things to tick off in various maps. Like, go and open this chest. And I went to the chest and it either was not there, like physically invisible, and I couldn't interact with it, even though there was a map marker above it and it was there the last time I'd been there. Or it would just say locked. And you're not allowed to open it, even though you're meant to. So I then had to quit out of the game, go back in, still said locked. So then I actually fully exited the entire application back to the PS4 menu, started it up fresh, and then it let me open it. There's just lots and lots of weird little bugs, and I don't really understand. The whole thing, the whole game seems to be slower and buggier than it was last time I played it. I don't know what's going on. I've said it before about the hot fixes they keep doing, but these fundamental issues have been around since launch, and a lot of them are still there. And I don't understand what the priorities are.
This is the game whose pause menu used to like kill the frame rate, didn't it?
It's gotten worse as well. It's still not as bad as it was, but it's gotten worse since I last played. There's now a flipping loading bar when you first start up the game. So it'll start up. It'll sit on the splash screen for maybe 10 seconds. Then it'll show 2K and Gearbox. And then Claptrap will roll across the screen a few times. And he used to do that. And it did take a little while. But now they've added a loading bar to it. And it just seems to take that much longer because you're really aware of how long you're looking at it for. Then you get to the main menu, at which point you have to load into the game. It took me about 5 minutes to start playing yesterday through all the loading screens. And I was just like, man, I was kind of disappointed by this one. I think on the whole, it's nice to have more Borderlands to play, and I did enjoy myself. But the things that I didn't like were really basic issues that should not have been issues. And I just think that's such a shame. And it may be better on different platforms, but certainly on PS4, it's not very good at the moment. And that's such a shame.
Yeah, and you'd kind of expect, like, you know, sometimes games get released with slow startups, but it's something that they can patch out over time when they've had time to just optimize things better. Like, I remember the Insane Trilogy used to take ages to load. Well, the Insane Trilogy used to hide the loading with an unskippable intro. So it would show the logos and it would be already loading the game underneath, and then that bit where Crash jumps into that machine and gets up-resed, that was hiding the loading. And likewise, Spyro just had a splash screen with a big loading bar on the front. But both of those games, after they were released, I think within a few weeks or possibly months, a patch was released that just hugely optimized the startup, and that went away. So you'd think by now that just quality of life things like that would have been tweaked. You know, in a sense, I can forgive more the idea of some DLC being added that's been developed from home in a lot of, you know, for the most part, you know, being a bit buggy. But just the general quality of the game on the whole, you'd hope that they'd be chipping away at that and trying to make it better and just an overall smoother experience. But
yeah,
and I guess they've made some progress, but it's still got some issues.
It's still got a ways to go, especially as it's a lot of its setup is that it's meant to be this almost live service game. They're adding live events and various seasonal things and stuff, and yet fundamentally there's still a fair amount wrong with it. Taking your example there, Bloodborne was another game that had horrible load times when it launched, and it just used to, I think the loading screens were just the logo before, and all the other Souls games had item descriptions and stuff on the menus, which made it a bit more interesting. And they patched it, and it loads a lot faster, and you can read about items while you're loading, which is, you know, a huge difference. But here, it took a long old time, and there's still stuff like this is just sort of emblematic of the whole issue for me, is that when you go into your backpack and the selection, you know, the first thing that's selected is your first weapon in the top left-hand corner. And if you press right, which would make sense to press if you wanted to go over to the right to scroll mm-hmm. through the other stuff that's in your backpack that isn't equipped, when you press right, it goes into the flipping quantum realm. It just disappears. The cursor disappears. It doesn't select anything anymore. You have to press left to release it from wherever it's gone to get back to your equipped weapons, and then press down and then press right, and then you will go into your backpack. Pressing right immediately makes you select something that doesn't exist, and has been the case since launch and is still happening. And I don't know, like, it's just something you make peace with. But when the game was being all buggy and that was still happening, I was getting really mad about it. I was like, why? Yeah. Like, why is this still a problem? It's ridiculous. It's such a minor thing, but why is it still happening? Stop balancing my character and making them weaker. Yeah. And make the game work properly.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a shame.
It is a shame. It's a good DLC. It raises the level cap to 60 and... you know, it gives you some new legendaries and new weapons and new characters mm-hmm. and story. And as I said, about 5 hours of gameplay, but fundamentally a very buggy experience for me on PS4.
Oh, man. Okay.
Which is a shame.
Well.
It's a shame.
Well, maybe we should move on to a question to help you forget about it.
Oh. No, we're going to keep complaining. No, let's move on.
We've got a question here from Doug. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, I'll read it. This is from our good friend Doug, who says, to follow on onto your discussion about age ratings from last week, I played the original GTA and Doom on the PC, and both were rated 18 and talked about as violent and gory games. But Doom, 1993, and Doom, 2016, are hardly comparable despite having the same rating. So is it more about the depiction than the rating? Would you allow a 10-year-old nephew or niece to play Doom 1993, but not Doom 2016?
This is a good... I say this all the time, but this is a good question.
It's a very good question, Doug.
This is... So, I think there's this weird phenomenon where, depending on the level of technology at the time, whatever, like, cutting edge is, if you depict gore in cutting edge visuals, whether it's Mortal Kombat or Doom 1993 versus Doom 2016, seeing it in the most cutting edge visuals possible is like horrific and abhorrent and like, oh goodness me, children shouldn't be exposed to Liu Kang doing that. Oh, look how gory that is.
Whoa,
oh
blimey,
look at all the pixels on that skull that's just come out of that man in Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. I was reading this question. I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, you know, an 18's an 18. And then at the last bit where it was like, would you let a 10-year-old nephew or niece play Doom 93? I was like, yeah, I would. Like, of course I would. Like that, it, you know, it's just not a harrowing depiction of gore or violence, really. Mm-hmm. And it's so strange because I can understand to an extent why parents in the 90s wouldn't want their kids to play that. Parents would look at that and go, God, look how realistic this is. It's horrible. I don't want my child looking at this. But nowadays, I'd be like, you know, I might still be a bit reserved with handing out Doom 2016 to a child under 10. But I don't think I'd mind them playing Doom 93 or Mortal Kombat, mm-hmm. the original. Or yeah, it's a strange... It's a strange effect or a strange phenomenon.
It is. I would probably wait until children I had an influence over, be they nieces or nephews or sons or daughters or others and so on. I'd probably wait until they were teenagers, perhaps, before giving them those kinds of games. Because, yes, of course, the gore isn't comparable anymore. But speaking as a spookable child...
Yes.
It wasn't so much about the gore. It wasn't so much the gore or the violence that was scary. It was these games. And I still think it holds up for Mortal Kombat to this day. It's just a bit of a creepy game. You know, the music and the whole setup and the sort of scary stop motion, weird animation of people. It's all It's all not right. And if
there's a lot of screaming in that game.
Exactly. I think it's still an upsetting experience to someone who is not ready to play it yet. So I still wouldn't let a child play it. I would think carefully about letting a teenager play it that I had any control over. But equally, as someone who was very spooked and who did not see these games and or even really know that they existed because I lived in like a Spyro and Crash bubble, you know, Crash Team Racing bubble or Tony Hawk's or whatever, or Pokemon, seeing these games, being exposed to these games through my cousin or friends and stuff for the first time was an inherently quite overwhelming experience. So is there something to be said for slowly weaning your children onto these kinds of games so that when they do see them or when they do come across them in life, it isn't like this, oh my God, what on earth is going on moment. And I know everyone's different because, you know, you played these kinds of games and you were fine, but I wasn't. Yeah. And there's a good chance that other kids wouldn't be as well. So there's the, you know, it's a really difficult one to draw a proper line in the sand under, but I would say teenager, and maybe expose them a little bit to various things that aren't quite as violent when they're younger.
Or you could even on the road to Doom 2016, you could wean or, you know, expose children to things like that in a gradual way by actually going via retro graphics that aren't so explicit, and then slowly work your way up towards something that's slightly more of a realistic depiction.
I
hasten to add, I think you make a good point about fear and creepiness and disturbing content, for sure. I think my answer was particularly just with regards to depictions of gore. I think very cartoony, 2D, pixely gore, I wouldn't feel too concerned about showing to a kid, purely in terms of how realistic it looks and therefore how troubling it's likely to be. But you make a very good point about, you know, just eeriness and things like that. Yeah. Like, you say that, you know, I played games like this when I was younger and I was fine. I've talked occasionally over the past few years of content that we've made about a game called Gauntlet Legends, which you might be aware of. It was out on like N64, one of the Sega consoles, and PS1, and it had like a warp room, like a crash game, and you would go to different levels, and in the castle world, one of the levels there was the castle dungeon. So you would like warp off to the dungeon, and there would be really terrible like pixel art, like skeletons hung up on the wall and stuff, and that wasn't creepy at all, but the music was like really dark and spooky and burned into the music track. You can listen to this yourself if you just look up Castle Dungeon music, Gauntlet Legends, burned into the music with the sound effects of people screaming their heads off, like being tortured in this dungeon. They're like moaning and going like, and it's really, really horrible. And the music on top of that is like, it's quite intense. And that alone, it was just the audio design there in that game that terrified me. I hated that level so much. Whereas if I played it with the music turned off, I would have been absolutely fine. You know, despite the fact that that game did have, you know, a little bit of kind of body bits and dismemberment and things like that. And as I say, there were sort of corpses hung up on the wall and stuff. So yeah, there is a lot to be said, you're absolutely right, about overall vibes and spookiness. It's not just about, well, that's pixel blood, so it's fine. I do think pixel blood in and of itself is, you know, I wouldn't mind showing that to a 10-year-old, but it's, yeah, the wider context would stop me probably in most cases from actually giving a game like that to a kid of that age.
It's as much fear of the unknown as it is anything else, in the same way as we've discussed before about how playing there's a certain game for everyone where you play it and your mind gets expanded. You're like, oh wow, this is games can do this is incredible. I didn't know that. The same thing goes for spooky things too, where you experience something that you're not used to and it just makes you your whole brain and body shut down. Where yeah. you're thinking, oh my God, what is it? Oh no, I don't like this at all. Games are meant to be nice and fun. Why is it doing this?
Yeah.
So yeah, you just got to, you know, there's no right way to do it, but I would wait until marriage, quite frankly.
Yes.
And then they can play yeah. Doom.
Absolutely.
That's how we'll do it. Peter, it's time to move on to another section that actually requires...
It's time to pick up a prop.
To pick up the prop, the proper. Do you yeah. have your proper?
I've got it right here.
It's time, everybody, for weird news.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's weird news.
This just...
Oh my God, sorry, no, what's just in?
This just in, weird.
Oh God.
Weird things are in, it's just in, can confirm, coming in right now, yeah. Just what? Weird.
Oh, that is a lot yeah. of weird. I see it coming over the hill, what is it?
It's a monster.
It's a weird monster, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Peter, what weird news have you got this week?
I've got some weird news that multiple people sent us on social media. Okay. Unfortunately, this story broke... I think pretty much on the day of, or even at the time that we were recording the previous episode of the podcast. Therefore, it's about a week old, mm-hmm. but it's well worth covering. And definitely not the kind of thing we can stick into the thumbnail / video title.
Oh, boy.
Because YouTube will not be pleased to hear that we are now entering the Animal Crossing butt plug stage of 2020.
Oh, for God's sake.
This is written by Luke Plunkett on Kotaku, mm-hmm. our unofficial weird news correspondent.
Yes.
And I've just noticed next to his name, it says filed to, and then a colon, and there's different categories. It's filed to Animal Crossing, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Nintendo, and sex.
What?
Kotaku has a sex category.
Oh,
I'm going to click
God.
That.
Yeah,
after this,
let's find
after
out what's going
podcast.
On.
Or do you want to know now?
Yeah,
what
let's,
else
do, it, let's do it now.
Okay, a journey inside Second Life's most expensive brothel.
That's a good video. That's a People Make Games video with Chris Pratt. Well, Chris Pratt is the one who runs the channel. I don't think he's in the video, but it's very good.
That's from May. Sex games are voice acting's wildest new frontier. I'm sure they are. That's written by Luke Winkle, that one.
That's a good name.
How appropriate. And the uplifting tale of Dildo Face, a sim who dared to dream.
That sounds wonderful.
It does. There's all kinds of other stuff too, but I think we'll finish with Dildo Face.
You not finish on Dildo Face?
Yeah, I know. And this story, frankly, is now going to pale in comparison next to a story about Dildo Face the sim. But thank you to Jimmy Kotam, or Kotam, and also Tom PP8, who sent this to me/us on Twitter.
Wonderful.
Okay, here we go. So, Luke Plunkett. I'll read the title again. We are now entering the Animal Crossing butt plug stage of 2020. A lot of people around the world, especially in the US, are still stuck at home, away from friends and loved ones. Out of this isolation, new ways of keeping in touch have emerged, including, ellipsis, butt plugs and vibrators that can sync with Animal Crossing and vibrate whenever the player swings a shovel. As Vice report, Kyle McCulis has designed a way for a sex toy to communicate with a Nintendo Switch and its haptic feedback capabilities, pairing everything together so that when an Animal Crossing character triggers that rumble by digging a hole or hitting something with a shovel, it's reflected in a vibrating butt plug. The effect, there's a GIF, of course, okay, attached.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't there be?
Yeah. The effect can be triggered in solo play, but there are multiplayer possibilities as well.
Wow.
Which takes this to an entirely new level, I think you'll agree.
Mm-hmm.
While a visitor to your island won't trigger haptic feedback by hitting you, falling into a hole, like, say, after stepping on a pitfall seed, will trigger haptic feedback. So long as you're flailing around in that hole, the sex toy will keep vibrating, which McCulis describes as basically whipping the orgasm button until someone's done.
Oh my god.
Thank you for that, Mr. McCulis. You can try this out for yourself, said Neil Buchanan. Try it yourself at the project's GitHub page, which is equipped with the very handy welcome text. Maybe you just saw someone tweeting a sex toy working with Animal Crossing and were wondering what the F was going on. So that's the welcome text to his GitHub page.
Brilliant.
And that's the end of the article there. So
wow.
You can long distance via Animal Crossing have some time with a consensual loved one.
Do some butt rumbles.
Yeah, brumbles.
That's what it's called. Playing in the brumbles. Animal Crossing.
Yes.
Just what Nintendo envisioned, I imagine.
Yeah, well, that's why it's called New Horizons, I think. They're trying to break new ground.
You just slide it into your Tom's nook.
Oh, my goodness gracious me, yes. That's
right?
That's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other characters, but I can't think of any.
There's some sort of horrible turnip analogy there. But
oh,
I don't...
yeah. See, no, that's good. Run with that. What have you got?
Oh, I don't know.
Do something.
I'm offering one turnip for £200 an hour.
For two bells.
Yeah, for two. Yeah, of course.
There we go. I don't want to go anywhere further down that hole, really.
No.
I don't have to.
Well, certainly not down any hole went as far as... Yeah,
the next
as
weird
as
news
concerned.
That I've brought, Peter, is this one comes courtesy of Callum James Straw at CJStraw93 on Twitter. Thank you, Callum. I just did rapid scrolling. You know, because I've got billions of notifications and it was from a couple of days ago and I just found it. Anyway, this is from PC Gamer.
Oh, okay.
And... it's from James Davenport from PC Gamer, and the title is Dark Souls 3 with Assault Rifles is my new favourite easy mode.
Oh my goodness me.
Yeah. I'm not one of those Dark Souls people that goes on and on about the creator's vision and the intended experience to justify the steep challenge of From Software's games. Play them that way if you enjoy playing them that way. Totally cool and good and fun, it says. But if your style is something a little faster and looser, just mod a whole bunch of guns into Dark Souls 3 and play it like Call of Duty tragic yet dignified Dragon Warfare. It's the ideal easy mode for FPS players looking to try out one of these wacky RPGs the kids won't quit talking about these days. Modern Firearm is a Dark Souls 3 mod that replaces all the default ranged weapons with, well, automatic weapons. Modder Assassasbk is what it says. Assassasbk knows it's completely broken and unbalanced, but that's the big idea anyway. Subverting the infamous difficulty of a subdued, morose action RPG with the brashest of video game weapons is modder poetry. Every weapon, except the sniper rifle, has alternate firing modes too. Handling the weapon with two hands results in automatic fire, which causes less damage per shot and reduces accuracy, but at a lower stamina cost. Handling firearms with one hand enables the semi-automatic firing mode, which gives projectiles higher damage and accuracy, but at a higher stamina cost and slower firing rate. Besides some pretty decent gun models, the mod adds in some new sound and graphical effects to really sell the goofy illusion. A more apt comparison than Call of Duty might be Resident Evil, because most of the models are based on guns from that series. So here's what here's the guns you can get.
Yeah.
Instead of a light crossbow is replaced with the Vector SBR. A heavy crossbow becomes the AK-47.
I know that one.
You know that one. A night crossbow becomes the M16. Okay. Know that one?
Yeah, yeah, vaguely.
Okay. Repeating crossbow becomes the Thompson SMG. Know that one?
I'm aware of Thompson, but not a Thompson SMG.
Okay, you might know this one. Sniper crossbow becomes the sniper rifle.
No, I'd know that
one. Know that
one?
Okay. What about the Avalyn becoming an MP5?
You know the MP5? I've heard of that one.
Okay. Well, how about, you won't know this one, the Arbalest becoming a shotgun?
Oh, I've never heard of that. No.
Okay, anyway. No. The mod is available now, and it says here that you're going to want to install everything via the Dark Souls 3 mod engine. So there you go. If you want to storm your way through Dark Souls 3 on PC and don't care about the authentic experience, you can now get guns.
Maybe I can now finally play that game without just feeling sad.
Maybe, I mean, you'll still feel sad, but you'll be able to shoot the sad away.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Well, what an interesting, unexpected, weird story there.
Yeah, quite. Quite.
Thanks for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Let's move on to another question, shall we?
Mm-hmm. Let's. We've got a question here from Carrie Buchter. Which I've never known if I've been saying that right, but I'm going to keep saying Carrie.
I don't think we've been corrected yet, so
no.
That's how we've always said it. Let us know, Carrie.
And Carrie opens with, "Hey, lovely boys." So, you know, we must be doing something right.
Not, "Hey, mispronouncing fools."
Exactly. That's what she would have said if we've been saying
that's
it
what
wrong.
She would have said.
I've noticed that while streaming, Peter often speaks technically about his game, whereas Ben voices his character aloud or, usually in Minecraft, rambles nonsensically.
How rude.
No insult meant. I enjoy that the most,
liar.
She says.
Liar.
I'm wondering if this is how you play even when you don't have an audience, or what your typical play style is. My husband often creates backstories in his head or narrates out loud to me, and my play style is to swear loudly at enemies when I get hit. Thank you for all your hard work. Love you both. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie. Also, I made a note here on my document that Richard Group asked a similar question about sort of the difference between our stream playing and our home playing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dick Group.
Thank you. Oh, God, well, we lost a patron. That was fun while it lasted. Thank you, Richard.
Yeah.
Peter,
yeah.
When you're sat there alone in your living room playing Spyro, do you talk to the lamp about how it was made?
Do I say out loud, "Oh, did you know that the soundtrack of this is done by the drummer from The Police?" Yes, I did, Peter. No, I'm not being facetious. It's an interesting question. I think that certainly when I'm alone, I definitely take a more narrative approach, I guess, like Carrie's partner. Mm-hmm. Don't quite voice the character in my head necessarily, but I do like to build a backstory, particularly with an RPG that allows you to build your own backstory. You know, I wouldn't necessarily build my own backstory in my head for a linear third person, you know, PS1, one of the PS1 exclusive games, like come up with my own backstory to Uncharted or whatever. Mm-hmm. But one thing I've mentioned before is that when playing, for example, something like Skyrim, I don't like to, I think it's more of a D&D term, but it's applicable in video gaming. I don't like to mix player knowledge with character knowledge. So in D&D, that means like the player might be aware that like, oh, the DM let slip to me last week that there's going to be a dragon if I open that chest. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to open that chest. You have to like keep playing the way that your character would do. And I do that with video games where, for example, I might know that, oh, the code for that door is 12345 because I remember it from the last time I played this game. But I won't open that door until I reach the guy's office where he's written 12345 on his desk, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Or even when I was playing Spyro a couple of weeks ago on my stream, halfway through Spyro, you release a dragon who says, "Spyro, there's a secret level in the artisan homeworld. Jump on the stepping stones. And you can do that right from the start of the game. Like, literally, from the moment the game starts, you can run to the left and open the secret level. But I never, ever do it until that dragon tells me about it. So that's one thing I do. But when I'm streaming a game, it's normally a game that I'm very fond of. I maybe know a little bit about the development process and kind of some of the secrets or glitches, or I've watched speedruns of it. And to me, like, when I'm playing a game that I enjoy on stream, part of the reason I do that is not just to entertain people with the game's narrative or the narrative that I'm building. It's to actually show off the game in all its forms, really. I like to delve into the development and, you know, say, oh, look, there's this cool glitch here where you can do this. And, you know, so, yeah, it's kind of like a showcase of the game, and, you know, like a tour guide. I think I've said before in one of my streams, I feel like I'm going, and here's where this person got involved and did this thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm sort of trying to show the game off in every aspect.
Yeah.
What about you? Are you always building narratives, or is that more of a you're trying to put on an interesting show for the audience?
That's exactly it. In the same way that you don't chat to your lamp about when the drummer from The Police did the soundtrack, I don't sit there and go, whoa, oh my, hey, stop that, no, of course not. No, I don't do that. You know, it's been an interesting journey for us with streaming, because neither of us really did it before all that much, and so it is interesting to see how we've developed different styles of streaming, seemingly, because we're extremely used to playing games for worst games ever and things like that, but you don't have that live interaction with people, and you can always cut out silence in an edit that's pre-recorded. Mm-hmm. But with streams, you kind of have to be on it. You know, it doesn't mean you have to be a big, loud, obnoxious idiot person, you know. But it does mean that it depends. Like, sometimes you'll tune in to some streamers and they do just sit there in silence and they're just focusing on what they're doing, because that's how it is and their audience gets that. But I don't feel comfortable sitting in silence when people are watching. It feels strange. And so
I sometimes catch myself if I'm concentrating and I'm like, oh, quick, say something.
Exactly. So I tend to play a lot of games that that let me make a character anyway, so that I can have that pretend interaction and give them a voice, you know, or give them an invented personality, so that I feel more engaged and able to bounce off a pretend person, you know, so to speak. But when I'm playing games at home, I just focus on the games, you know. I'm not talking out loud, and the times I do play with someone sat next to me, I feel very aware that they're sat next to me, and so when I mess something up or I die or I don't make a jump properly or whatever, I feel the need to comment on it for their sake, because they're there. Because I don't know why, it's just sort of inbuilt that someone's watching, so I need to acknowledge that I messed something up, or oh, that looked cool. But you know, it's very different when you're by yourself.
Yeah, it's a bit like watching it's like watching comedy. If someone's sitting with you and you're watching a funny movie, you might find something equally as funny as you would do sitting on your own. But on your own, you might just go, huh. Or not even that. You sort of laugh in your head. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole psychological thing that's like proven that you laugh way more when you're with someone.
You do.
And I think actually it's to do with, or like one theory of it is that you're trying to show the other person that, haha, I get that joke. I'm smart enough to understand why that's funny.
Interesting.
That's like one theory to it. But yeah, it's strange, isn't it? How different certain responses to entertainment and media can be depending on whether you're on your own or not.
Yeah, absolutely. But there you go. Hope that answers your question. Mm. Peter, I've just bit my ulcer, and it's time to move on to have we got your thing there? We got your
thing? A big discussion.
It's
I've
time
got
to
it.
Move on to the big discussion. It's big discussion time. Big discussion time. Da 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 da. Big discussion time. Da 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 da. Big discuss. Are you ready?
I really am. I'm mostly
ready.
Ready
to discuss
for you to read the name of the person who submitted this question.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, of course. This is from Mr. Uncle Butters.
Yes.
That's their full given Christian name.
Mr. Uncle Butters.
Mr. Uncle Butters.
Yeah.
If they're an uncle, would they be called Uncle Uncle?
Yeah, probably. Well, I think Uncle's the middle name. I think their first name is Mr.
Oh. I think that. So it could be Uncle Uncle, but also Mr. Mr.
Yeah, I think if you address them formally, you have to call them Mr. Uncle Butters.
Oh my God. What if they have a different title? What if they're a reverend and also a member of the House of Lords?
Yeah.
And also our uncle at the same time?
Oh, they would be the Right Reverend Lord, Mr. Uncle. No, they'd be Uncle, the Right Reverend Lord, Mr. Uncle Butters.
Perfect.
The man who's going to be marrying me, as in conducting the ceremony, is Professor Reverend. Or Reverend Professor, I think.
Reverend.
Yeah, he's...
That's good.
He lectures in universities and is also a vicar.
Wow. Yeah. About doing good marriages,
probably,
I'm assuming.
How to wait until the wedding night before you do anything.
Yeah, don't invite demons into your bedroom or whatever it is. I don't know. I should go to one of his classes.
Mm, yeah.
Need to know more. Anyway, sorry, Mr. Uncle Butters, for fixating on that. Howdy doody, my dudes. A large part of my gaming life is consumed by FIFA, insert year here, and other annual sporting video game releases like WWE or NBA 2K. You boys seemed less inclined to purchase / play these annual releases, but I would be interested to hear your thoughts on the business model, sorry, that was my tongue getting in the way, and if an overhaul of said model would be realistic or even viable. I personally think the quality of games and experiences for players would be improved if the likes of EA and 2K released annual roster updates or less expensive patches / DLC at set intervals. Restricting actual game releases to every 3 to 4 years would then theoretically give developers time to adapt to new tech and significantly evolve the gameplay between each release.
Yeah.
However, I doubt that publishers could justify parting with their $60 per unit per annum. Keep up the awesome work and can't wait to see what you do next. Warmest regards. It's an interesting question, Uncle Right Reverend Lord Mr. Uncle Butters.
It is.
Mr. Uncle Butters, sorry.
I mean, it's kind of in, well, not in two parts, but like if I particularly answer the part where you ask if is an overhaul of said model realistic or even viable, I would say it's definitely realistic and viable in that, you know, they would only be switching to the same model that a lot of development studios do use, which is to work on a game for 3 or 4 years. So in that sense, I think there's money to be made. You just need to balance the books and think about the budget versus like what you think the game is going to make in terms of revenue, and go, okay, here's what we spend, here's what we'll hopefully make in profits. It's viable or not viable. Here's, you know, you just do the maths. But whether I think it's realistic in the sense that will it ever happen, I think now we're just in this space where there will always be a new FIFA every year, a new NBA every year, probably a new wrestling game every year as well. I think that's slightly more open to change, but I agree that like your alternative is much better. I think that the longer that is spent on a game, time-wise, generally, the better it's going to be. You know, they can adapt to new technology rather than essentially copy and paste large parts of the previous game's code or design or whatever. And I think the reason they justify bringing out a new game every year, take the case of FIFA, for example, is to say, oh, well, you know, there's new talent coming along every year. There are transfers made, so suddenly our team... default like squads are out of date and stuff, but you know, the idea of releasing just sort of patches or you know DLC or whatever based on squad changes and so on, that's a really good idea. I think like that would be preferable in my view to keep the games up to date, make sure that it's the most realistic simulation of the current Premier League or whatever, but without having to constantly put out a new game every 12 months. You know, you look at the Assassin's Creed series, which isn't even a sports game, but they were putting one out every single year. The moment that they took a little bit longer and brought out Origins after 2 years of development, or, you know, maybe it was sort of 18 months, that game, I believe, had something like a 10% jump in its average review score. I think it went up like nearly 10%. It went up from like 70s to 80s. Now, obviously, that's only one data point. We've only got that one game in the Assassin's Creed series where they spent 2 years rather than one, apart from way, way earlier on, of course. So you can't just go off that as an example of, oh, well, if you take longer on games, it's a better game. But yeah, I think it kind of, in a sense, it goes without saying. You don't need the stats to necessarily back up the notion that spend longer on a project and it will be better. You know, the most recent wrestling game was infamously just a buggy mess from the moment it came out. And I suppose it's probably still a little bit unstable. I don't really know. I've not heard anyone talk about it for a while. But yeah, it would just be nice if they spent longer on these things and didn't try and excuse the annual development of a new one by saying, oh, well, you know, things have changed in the roster, so we've got to bring out a new one.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of what I make of the business model, I mean, I'm not a huge fan. People look forward to it every year.
Yeah.
Like, clearly you do, Mr. Uncle Butters. You know, people buy them every year. And there would be an element of, I think there'd be an element of sadness from a large section of people if this game didn't come out every year anymore, because it's a staple. You know, people look forward to their FIFA every year. However, looking through that sentimentality at the business side of things, it's because companies are making money hand over fist from these sports titles. They're annualized. They make millions, if not billions, every year from these games, and the sales never dip. They're always ridiculous. They're always in the top sales charts. They're always there for the entire year until the new one comes out. They make so much money from this business model. The only reason that they would move to a more acceptable model, like the one you've suggested about the sort of FIFA, but with an annual subscription, which is great. You know, you can still charge $60 or whatever, you know, the price of a game, but you just get an updated roster and you get constant updates anyway. The only reason they would move to a model like that is if they stand to make more money that way.
Yeah.
Or if something forces their hand, they want to try something different. Because it may well be that they need to take a step back or need to take that year off, like you said, Peter, and just reevaluate their whole model. Because as it stands, they make a lot of money. But maybe if they invested in a different model, this subscription model, they may see a higher retention of players and a higher retention of people buying and staying subscribed to FIFA or whatever, you know. If you look at how Xbox is pursuing the next gen, especially with Game Pass, that's a similar deal where on the surface it's like, why wouldn't you want to sell these games? Why wouldn't you want to just sell these individual games to people? And clearly there is a viable business model there where offering loads of games to people under the cost of one subscription, it works, and it's making them a lot of money, which is why they're still doing it and they're pushing it really hard and people love it. So there is scope for them to readjust and potentially make as much, if not more, money, but that would need to be very clear before they did it. So I don't think it's possible, but I don't think it's going to happen. And if it does, it's not going to be for a long time.
No, and it's not going to be for any reason other than, as you say, they've determined that would be a better business model. We would make more money off it. You know, as I say, I think the public-facing reason for bringing out a new game every year is, oh, well, there are changes and we want to keep it up to date. That's not the reason. That literally is not. They don't really care that much about people having the very, very best quality experience. So then no one's sitting in the boardroom at EA or 2K or whatever thinking, oh, well, we really must update this roster, otherwise people will be sad. They're thinking, no, what we can do is bring out the next one and make some more money. But,
absolutely. They'll sell you a copy of FIFA every year. It'll be brand new Ultimate Team, so they can make a load of money through DLC and stuff like that, microtransactions and what have you. And they'll just keep doing that forever. They will keep doing that forever unless something changes and, you know, discs get outlawed, at which point they'll just sell it digitally for even more money. The ideal model for a game like, you know, sports games, really, I would personally not lump WWE games in with those because they are inherently different and more varied, in my opinion, than FIFA is. I know there's a lot of customization, but ultimately you're tweaking a game of football and that's it.
Yeah.
And I say that's it, not trying to be dismissive or anything. I know there's a lot to FIFA and I've played a lot of FIFA, but the point still stands. You could definitely release FIFA, the game, and then not have another one for 5 years.
Yeah, the branding remains unchanged, whereas in wrestling it's constantly, you know, there's all kinds of things being mixed up all the time and new. Just even from a visual standpoint, the visual branding of wrestling changes constantly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you patch a new player into a team, there's a good chance they already exist in the game somewhere anyway. Mm. So it's just a case of changing the shirt and updating the stats. Or it's a case of scanning a new person and patching them in. Whereas with WWE, you know, they've got different music and they've got different attires and stuff. So I think it would be harder to keep that game updated than it would with FIFA. But, you know, I'm not entirely sure. You know, even then, there's a lot of teams in FIFA, and if they're all getting new kits each year, that's a lot of work.
Mm.
But if you're subscribed to a sort of a pass that costs, you know, $60 or £60 or however much games are going to be on PS5 and Xbox Series X and so on going forward, then does that not equate to the cost that they would have got from you anyway?
Mm, yeah.
What's the purpose of putting in the effort and spending the money on a whole new FIFA game if you could, in quotations, just update the various player squads and tweak stats and stuff and maybe patch in a new game mode or take out another game mode, you know, something like that? Surely that would end up costing the developer and the publisher less than it would be to manufacture all these new discs, you know, for brand new games, and pay graphic designers to mock up new art and new ad campaigns and all that kind of stuff. You know, if FIFA just became this ever-present, which it is already, but this ever-present thing that you just stayed subscribed to, there's scope for that. That could happen. I don't know that it will, though, but it could.
And they could do, like, if they wanted to, I don't know how sort of serious or not serious the audience is in FIFA, but, you know, there would even be scope for, like, some really silly DLC or, like, cosmetic items or something, you know, some really strange kits, or, you know, you could have people dressed up, all of your players are just, their model is swapped by their mascot or whatever, you know.
Oh, God.
There's all kinds of stuff. Like, what I mean is that over a year or two, if you're waiting before the next FIFA comes out and it's just this subscribed service, other than, like, updating the roster and updating the league tables and so on, it's like, well, what else would they add or take away? You know, maybe a patch here and a patch there, but how would they really sell new content? Well, they could, if they really wanted to, go pretty wild with it and add some, you know, wacky events or, you know, add, like, legacy players from, you know, decades ago.
Well, yeah, retro kits too.
Retro kits, yeah. There would be scope for more than just updating the roster to make it the most accurate in, you know, compared to the real league tables and the real squads out there. You know, they could add all sorts of different downloadable stuff. Not that we're normally in favor of things like that, but I'm just saying, I think I would prefer that business model to them releasing what is almost the same game every year. It gradually changes over time, but 1 year after the next is very similar to the previous one.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I completely agree. And if it becomes more of a live service style game, which, you know, again, we're not huge fans of, but equally we're not the ones who are buying the same game every year in FIFA, then you could, you know, you could draw from other sporty games or esports games like Rocket League, where, this month we're going to add in the ice hockey version of Rocket League.
Exactly
just,
that, yeah.
Just for this period, you know, along with, as you say, the legacy players and retro kits, that sort of stuff. You know, it's all stuff that you could bring in and take away. That's the, I don't want to say it, the beauty, because it makes it sound like a good thing. And as we've said before, I'm not sure that we're the biggest fans of this whole model anyway. But that's the beauty of live service games, is that you can add features and take them away again. Mm. And if people are subscribed and they're not buying the new game every year, and you have to justify them buying a new game every year by adding in, you know, Volta mode, yeah, for example, then why not switch to this? It takes out a huge amount of hassle for you, because you can just patch in and patch out features and gameplay things as and when they're ready and relevant, and you know, and keep people on the hook as well.
Yeah,
you know, just keep them subscribed. It could work, but again, they would need to probably take a year off, or for there to be some transitionary period between the two models. Mm. And it would need to be guaranteed that they would make that money back, because a lot of people won't understand. A lot of people just want to go into Tesco in September or whenever and buy the new FIFA.
They do.
They don't know if it's suddenly not there. They're not going to understand, you know. and as we've said before, we live in this tiny little bubble of people who are informed.
Mm.
And even we can't pretend to know everything, you know. And there's a lot of people who do just have a console for FIFA, and that's it. And that's it. You know, they don't keep up to date on the industry.
Yeah.
They're not going to know. Where's FIFA gone? I don't understand. I've got to subscribe now. They see that as somehow worse than physically walking into Tesco and buying a copy of the game. And they may not do it. They may not be willing to do it. Mm. So it might be a hard sell to the majority of the player base anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's us. We've put the world, we've fixed FIFA and
that's it.
And other sports games. We just need now for the publishers to adopt such a perfect practice.
We'll have a word with them later.
Yeah, we will. We'll get in touch.
Give them a call. Let us know what you thought of everything we discussed this week in the comments and via these means, as well as some other stuff, right? There's some other stuff in here.
Aforementioned comments sections are available on youtube.com and twitch.tv/teamtriplejump, where we upload our videos and we do our streams. When we stream on either of those two channels, Lob Brotovic and Cecil Prumps are modding and doing a great job. Twitter and Facebook, we've got. Those are our social medias, twitter.com and facebook.com/teamtriplejump. Luke Eldon looks after Facebook and does it well. We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/teamtriplejump. As Ben says, there's all kinds of rewards available. You can ask questions on the podcast. You can see Worst Games Ever early, and so on and so forth. Have a look. We got a Discord, bit.ly/teamtriplejump. That is modded by Jack and Joe, who also do a great job. If you are watching this podcast on YouTube, you can listen to this podcast by going to play.acast.com/s/triplejump. We've got a website, triplej.mp, that's ju.mp, where we have a careers tab, which is occasionally populated with job postings, and we've got some other information. We've got a store, we've got a shop on there. The live stream VODs all go on YouTube now. And you can get to that by going to triplej.mp/VODs.
You certainly can. If you'd like to follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter, you can do @ThatPeterAustin, and myself just on Twitter @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams, and I'll talk more about this in a second, every Monday, Thursday for the joint stream, Blaze It, and Friday. Worst Games is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. It is a Worst Games Ever week. The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows, other shows as well, one every other week, and some other stuff too that hopefully we'll be able to talk about in the near future. Mm-hmm. We'll bloody see, though, won't we?
Yeah.
Make sure you leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with algorithms. As I said, it's a Worst Games Ever week. That'll be available on Friday for patrons and Sunday for everyone else, so get excited. We have a new streaming schedule. As we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we've recently brought on 2 new full-time members of staff, and as such we're busier than ever,
yeah,
ulcers and all. And so, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on what side of the fence you're sat on, we need to sort of scale back our streaming, which obviously we increased when lockdown began.
Yeah.
And we started working from home. We're going to revert back to the normal three stream a week model, where Peter does a solo stream, I do a solo stream, and we still do the joint stream, Blaze It, on YouTube. As it stands, Peter's keeping his Monday stream, I'm keeping my Friday stream, but that may shuffle around again as we look to return to the office and stuff, because I may not want to be there late on a Friday,
no.
As much as I'm okay being at home late on a Friday. So that might change. But as it stands, we will be returning to three streams per week. Next week, this week coming up after the podcast, we will still have the full complement of streams, but that's just the solo streams because we've got holiday to take this week.
Yeah.
So there are various days where Peter and I are off, which means that unfortunately we will not be doing a joint stream on YouTube. You will still, however, be getting four solo streams, and just keep an eye on social media. We'll tell you when those are going to be.
Yeah.
But I believe it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So no Friday stream, no joint stream, but there will still be two solo streams each.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your understanding. The week after, three streams.
Yeah.
And that'll be that.
That's
but
it.
We'll remind you next week. Remind you next week. Peter, talk to me about Uplink.
Uplink is an event. I believe it's the... Now, let me get this right. I think it might be the biggest retro event in New York State or something like that. they make some sort of claim that might not be true. I'm opening Uplink right now. in any case, it's a gaming expo that we are going to be involved in. They have a focus on retro gaming. So where better for us to do a live episode of Worst Games Ever? Uplink is going to be the 8th and 9th of August this year. And we'll be there doing live Worst Games. I think we've decided what game we're going to do, but I guess we won't say just yet. Yes. But in any case, it's an all digital event. You don't have to go along or risk, traveling when we should probably be minimizing that still. It's all going to be at uplink.liretro.com. Liretro.
It's probably not that.
No, I don't know. But uplink.liretro.com. Yes, new. Well, NY's largest and premier gaming exhibitor.
Oh,
I don't know if that's New York City or New York State, but they're a big retro gaming expo, and we're excited.
We are excited. Thank you very much for asking us to be involved.
Yeah.
We're so thrilled. So yeah, go to that website. You can find out a bit more about how it's all going to work, because it will be all digital, as Peter said. No physical attendance necessary. And I think there's ticket information, that sort of stuff. And we'll be streaming an episode of Worst Games.
Yep. It's
going to be good. If we can work out how to do it from home, I'm sure we will. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll work it out. Good. And that's all for this week. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. Just one last thing to mention before we go, and that's this week's sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, are you being bitten by pests?
Right now, yeah, I can feel them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, then you need to call the pest control company run by a half-cat, half-raccoon being.
Yeah?
Raccoon Kitty. They'll clean it good.
Good. They'll clean it good.
They'll clean it good. Available now at raccoon.ki.ty/liretro. Liretro, exactly. Perfect. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again very soon. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.